All right, welcome into the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner Herald here in downtown Athens. Well, we're getting closer and closer to the scheduled start date of football. We'll discuss a little bit later about how real of a possibility that is that football will start on time. We'll also talk a lot of Georgia football, even a little Georgia basketball, and maybe a little golf too from a former Bulldog who won a tournament last weekend. But first, Mark Weiser joins us by phone. I'm Ryan Dennis in the studio downtown Athens. And Mark, I might actually venture out tonight to a sociable place and get a drink. Now, this will be the first time I've been out in public, aside from, just going to pick up some food somewhere and then going right home and eating it. So, Mark, I guess you have not ventured out anywhere to eat, except for maybe down in St. Simon's Island. Is that right? Have y'all gone out to anywhere in Athens and gotten some food or anything?
That'd be Jekyll Island, not St. Simon's.
I was close. Right next door.
Yeah, right now I'm actually in Brooklyn, New York, getting ready for the NBA draft tonight. Anthony Edwards is... Oh, wait a second. That's not happening?
Yeah, I saw that last night, and I thought, man, that must be a... You know, Anthony Edwards must be thinking, dang, this should be my day. This should be my spotlight.
Yeah, I'll have to wait now till October to see that. Actually, let me think. If I wanted to fly from Georgia to New York, I think I could do that. I don't think Georgia made the list of states that New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey is saying if you're coming from those places, you have to take a 14-day quarantine because of the spike in cases there. So I'm good to go. I could fly to Brooklyn and maybe just pick up a nice New York hot dog, New York pizza, see a Broadway. No, I can't do that. What was your question?
So I was saying, me and my girlfriend, Emily, we're going to go to Walker's Pub tonight. It was a first date for us, so we're kind of celebrating a little bit a year ago. But anyway, that's beside the point. Then we're going to go get some dinner somewhere, maybe. We'll see. But this will be the first time I've ever gone out in public since, I think, March 13th, to actually sit down somewhere and have a drink
or something to eat. Why don't you ask Emily if she minds? Maybe you could live stream going to the pub and wherever else you guys go. I think our listeners would enjoy being able to share that moment.
Yeah. Okay, I see. What have you missed most about, to me it's like concerts, going out to maybe the Georgia Theater, obviously sporting events. You miss all that. You think about, man, it's something you take for granted until it's not there, you know. What have you kind of missed most during this whole thing?
By the way, I will say that Walker's Pub, they have some fine coffee. I have set up there with my laptop at one of their booths, ordered a nice large cup of Joe, and this was, I think, when there was a break from school, so there weren't that too many students around. It was a good little space. What am I missing? You know, in terms of concerts, there's actually been a lot of live streams of artists putting on. I'm going to recommend... have you seen this show on TV? They're doing a live Saturday night thing from the Grand Ole Opry. It's just called Opry. I think last week it was the lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish. He's now a country guy.
Darius Rucker.
Okay. But they've had a pretty good mix.
I was scrolling down my Facebook last night, and a band that I kind of discovered last fall was just playing the lead guy. They're called the Silks. They're out of Boston, but they were just kind of playing. So I stopped and listened to about 30 minutes of him and his wife just playing a solo duet type of deal, which was kind of cool. But you see a lot of that if you follow these pages and whatnot on Facebook. A lot of things will pop up like that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, so, you know, I know you're talking about your first time out, and I haven't been, hanging out in restaurants, doing a lot of more of curbside pickup type stuff like that. But as I mentioned, we went to the beach a couple weeks ago for trying to have a little quiet time there, but we drove through St. Simon's, and it was pretty crowded, and even in Jekyll, folks were out and about, and I noticed, I think it was Justin Thomas on the PGA Tour last week in Hilton Head, how he basically said, how it was, I don't know exactly what the term was, but he basically said anywhere he went out, he saw, a lot more people than he thought, and that people were kind of just doing their thing and not really changing their behaviors too much. So that might be kind of why we're seeing some numbers spiking all over the place, and some, you know, in some states, Florida and in Texas and Houston in particular, they're talking about how intensive care unit beds are filling up. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit more pessimism, I think, towards the college football season when you've seen a few schools here and there, Boise State, Houston.
Clemson hit hard last week.
Kansas State have shut down workouts, voluntary workouts, and LSU and Clemson had more than two dozen, I guess, incidents of positive tests. Now, Georgia, as we wrote about this week, is not divulging how many guys have tested positive. But Greg McGarrity did tell me that, to quote him, that things were full speed ahead as they continue to work out. And, it'll be late July, early August before decisions are made in terms of what college football will look like at Georgia. I'm sure the SEC will have something to say with it. They try to usually move together as one, although there will have to be some differences. I mean, you're going to see a college football weekend. Let's say it's week two, and there's, I don't know how many games it would be. I don't know what the non-conference schedule looks like. Let's say there's 10 games between, the 14 SEC teams. Maybe there'll be one or two that'll have to get canceled for one reason or another. If there's an outbreak on the team, or they don't want to travel to what might be a hot spot. You're seeing the NFL today announce that the Pro Football Hall of Fame game scheduled in August is called off, I guess. The PGA Tour had, a handful of guys that are not taking part this week, somewhat precaution. Some of them are just taking due diligence in terms of, a caddy test positive. The guy that he was going to play with might drop out, things of that nature. So we'll see what it looks like going forward, and a lot of questions still to be answered.
Well, that's what gives me less hope about the football season progressing as normal and not starting on time at all. It just does not seem like we are getting to a point where you'll feel comfortable about teams getting on the field and feeling safe out there, especially if teams keep putting out numbers like Clemson or Kansas State or LSU and stuff like that. They keep talking about we're flattening the curve, which, I mean, I don't know what people's perception of flattening the curve is, because obviously there's been spikes. It's more like the curve has plateaued. So we've gotten to this certain level and it's not going down. It's just kind of staying at that same level, which isn't good. But you had mentioned how Georgia would not release their numbers if they have any, which to me begs the question of, is that legal, so to speak, and why would they not want to at least put out there, hey, we've only had one out of all these tests, or we've only had two, so why would they not want to divulge any numbers that they might have had during this whole thing? And like I said, is it even allowed that they can hide those numbers, or not hide, but just not release those numbers?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of it being legal. Clearly, if it was illegal, they would probably be in some hot water. But, I mean, the university and the athletic association, the football players are part, their students at the university, and Georgia is announcing, on their website, a growing, obviously it's going to be growing as you add cases. I'm going to click on this now to see what it looks like. Last update was yesterday. It looks like number was 107 members of the UGA community, meaning students or employees, and that number has gone up a lot since the beginning of this month. Before, you had 100 so football players arrive, and also you've also had staff come back during phase one of the campus return. So those numbers are only going to go up as you get more people testing before they come on campus, or things of that nature, and As there were some record numbers of cases in the state of Georgia in the last week or so. So, in terms of the number of deaths in Clark County, that stood at 15. I think there's only been like one in the last 6 weeks or something like that. So that's obviously much better news in that regard. But look, as Georgia goes through and they get, the coaches aren't even the football assistant coaches and Kirby, they're not even allowed to be with them on the in the workouts. That will not happen until later in July. And when they do get together and start doing something that's more of a football practice situation with a lot more people, and I'm sure they're going to be changing the way that looks, you wonder how much spread there will be in that regard, in that, you know, if you're limiting yourself to groups of seven in these workouts, 20 guys coming together and then splitting that up three ways. It'll be interesting to see how that works, and you might even see more practices in these football programs nationwide to have to take a look and see what that looks like.
Right, we'll see mid-July when teams can do much more and how that'll look in the weeks that follow, which obviously Greg McGarrity said the other day that they don't have to make a decision now as far as if they can have fans, what the fan situation will look like. They will make those decisions probably at the end of July or maybe in early August. But as of now, I don't see any way that fans can be in the stands. September 12th is Georgia's first home game. It just doesn't seem like it can be a possibility right now. I don't know what you think, but there's no way that more than, maybe 5,000 fans, if that's even possible, can be in Sanford Stadium come that date. It's just unrealistic at the point we stand in our country, and especially with the spikes that have occurred in places like here, Texas, Florida, all across SEC country.
Yeah, I'm going to avoid trying to I think it if you'd asked me like 6 weeks ago, I think the number I was thinking was more in like 20,000 range. And then you heard, Jerry Moorhead, the university president, speak at the athletic board meeting, trying to put a positive spin, I guess, to a certain extent, that he was looking at, still having full capacity at Sanford Stadium. But of course, said then that the medical experts are going to kind of guide that. 5,000 seems like on the low end to me. I saw the Kentucky Derby announced today that they're going to have fans at their race in September. By the way, did you watch the Belmont Stakes?
I did not. Who won? You put a bet on a pony?
I can't remember the name of the horse, but it was the prohibitive favorite who just kicked ass. I mean, can I say that on the podcast? I don't know.
I'll beep it out in post.
But I mean, he kicked butt. Can I say that? We should be able to say that. Let's check.
Yeah.
Higher up. Didn't Kirby drop an F-bomb post-game against? Was that Auburn? Where was that?
Hey, that was at Auburn, and he apologized later. So you can apologize on our next podcast.
Look, if Kirby can spice up the language a little bit, I think we can do the same. it looked like a real deal type horse in that Belmont, and. I guess it's supposed to be kind of a weak field. But anyway, getting back to the Derby, I didn't see what the number was. I need to search that up. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, as it stands today, yeah, you're probably, right in terms of it doesn't feel like that. But, both if you look at SEC country, and it sounds like the governors kind of have a lot of sway in terms of what they're allowing for mass gatherings. Brian Kemp, Ron DeSantis in Florida, mm-hmm. The Alabama governor. I mean, they seem to have been kind of leading the way in terms of opening up their states. So maybe they'll also lead the way in terms of allowing large crowds. Now, if you look at the rally in in Tulsa that President Trump had, it depends on who you want to believe. I guess the folks in Tulsa, the officials there, said it was about 6,000 in that arena. I think the Trump campaign said it was 12,000, and there was various thoughts about why the number was less. Was the fact that people were actually concerned about catching the virus in an indoor building where people are screaming and yelling. Sanford Stadium's outside, so that's a different environment. And obviously there were other external factors that people blamed in terms of the protests that was going on during that rally. You see it there, and you'll see what happens in football, and there's obviously a financial part of the equation as well.
Well, let's get away from politics and get to NASCAR, which is but I was going to mention that NASCAR, had 5,000 paying fans last week. And now it was at Talladega where there's 250,000 seats or so. So, it looked like, little tiny dots spread out across the seats. But I guess that was a start. And if I don't know if there's a way to track the numbers, if anybody caught anything, or, you know, everything went smoothly. But
the other dynamic regarding fans in the stands at college football games is, will there be any requirements that fans that do go, if they're permitted, will have to wear masks? And given that the University of Georgia, for their classes, to some a bit of controversy, is just, I guess, advising them to wear, or strongly suggesting that students and faculty wear masks, but not requiring it, which I think they are saying that Georgia is kind of an outlier among top public universities in that regard.
Right. Hey, let's take a quick break right there. We'll come back. We'll talk about a good story you had the other day about Bulldogs walking to register to vote, which was kind of a cool story. But we need to take a break. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner Herald. Okay, as we mentioned before, that little music montage right there brought us back. Democracy Dog Walk was the headline we had on the onlineathens.com and in the Athens Banner Herald about Georgia football players being registered to vote. Now, I know Brian Gant had a big part in this. It was something, I guess, encouraged by the NCAA, right, to have have athletes register to vote. So kind of a big push in that sense. How did you kind of discover the story, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I mean, Brian Gant, who is kind of a fixture around the football program, I think he's been there, trying to remember exactly. I mean, I know he was with Donnan and then with Rick.
Ryan obviously had a big part in the Devon Gales situation, helped him through a lot of things, and the family get kind of the house over there in Houston.
Yeah, he posted on social media back like a week and a half ago that he kind of led a contingent of Bulldogs downtown to the Board of Elections and registered to vote. And this came about the same time, or actually a little bit before even, than the NCAA saying that they are encouraging programs to get players involved, have their voice be heard, and register to vote, and even asking or strongly suggesting that schools let them take off on election day to go ahead and do that as well. Now, I talked to Greg McGarrity about that, and it doesn't sound like at this point that there's any kind of edict that Georgia's taken the day off. It's kind of, it sounds like for now at least it's an individual program decision. Tom Crean said that that they were, he's talking about with that, 14 scholarship guys, 13, mm-hmm. 14, something like that. So, it's less of, it's a smaller group, and there's more than half those guys are from outside the state. So they made sure that those guys, registered in their hometowns and could be able to vote then absentee ballot, okay, or voting by mail in November. But it sounds like the SEC might come out with their own thing. Now, the SEC says overall, hey, we're all taking Tuesday off. Georgia and South Carolina play that week, and if both teams are not practicing on Tuesday, then there's no advantage, and I'm sure that's something that coaches think about. But you know what? Let's just hope that they're playing football in November, and that there's not major disruption.
Right. That was my main question about that whole thing. Is if they were registered in Clark County, say, how would they vote? And like you said, they come from all over the Southeast, really, and across the country. So, were they able to that day, pick their hometown or whatever so they could register there? Or do you know how that all kind of happened?
No, I don't. But I did find out that the football team leans heavily libertarian, which is not just I don't know the details of that. I mean, obviously a lot of them, or some of them, could choose to make their register to vote in Athens if they're planning to spend the next 3 years or something like that. But and I also don't know, can you register to vote? Is it kind of like a Dropbox? Can you fill out something? And so it looks like they're just dropping off something. Maybe they have their home address on there and they just dropped it off there. I don't know. That's the kind of detail that I didn't actually get a chance to talk to Brian Gant. I was told he was off on vacation, I guess, or just had some days off. So it'll be a question. I'm sure Kirby will be asked eventually about it once we get a chance to speak to him a little more often as football cranks back up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good little story, you know, to get the youth kind of voting. And I'm sure some of these kids, you know, didn't even understand the process or how it was how to get registered to vote. So that was a cool thing. Brian Gant, obviously, you know, big on doing a lot of positive things for the football team and the university. And it's good to see him lead them. A story you had this morning on our website, by the way, it's about 11:30 on a Thursday morning. The 25th of June that we're coming to you. Ty Fagan did a march in his hometown, a peaceful protest, kind of with all the Black Lives Matters. That was good to see Ty being able. I know that on Tuesday, I believe it was, Tom Crean was down in Thomaston where he was speaking to the GHSA about a new shot clock that he was hoping that the Georgia High School Association would implement into basketball. And he had a picture of himself and Ty Fagan down there. So about this story, Mark, you know, obviously a lot of issues in the communities here in Athens, of course, really throughout the entire country, with Black Lives Matter and protests kind of involving the George Floyd situation from Minneapolis. So I guess what did you find out from talking to people about how Ty and his family were able to participate in this in his hometown?
Well, first of all, I don't even think I would use the term protest. Given
peaceful
the
march,
that
maybe?
Given that the event included like city leaders and also members of law enforcement there, it was kind of a community gathering.
That's
where
good.
It was,
yeah.
You know, kind of people could speak their mind, and it was called a unity march. And, you know, I was asking Ty about kind of, you know, who did he go with? I know he went with his mother, and basically, but he said, you know, basically in this town, we're all family, meaning it's kind of a small town. I think there were, he said he thought it was at least 350. The local media there had it at 200. You know, Fagan is a guy that, you know, kind of has a certain role on Georgia's team, maybe overshadowed by some others. He's a rising junior, but I think, you know, a guy kind of finding his voice, and this gives him a chance to kind of speak his mind. And, you know, it's not like he just showed up with a sign and marched. He actually stood at the podium and spoke to the crowd. And I mean, it's a guy that was kind of the star on their basketball team. They won 2 straight state titles and left the program as leading scorer. So, you know, it would be interesting to see how not just him, but other guys in football as well, particularly in football, since that's the most high-profile sport at Georgia, you know, how they're going to, if they're going to speak up more, not just on you know, societal issues, and I'm sure that's kind of what's been going on a lot, but you wonder about, you know, if anyone will say anything about how they feel about, you know, how college athletics is going forward with playing during this COVID-19 crisis, if they feel like they're getting, you know, the care that they need, you know, you're seeing guys in the NBA as they, I guess, they're gathering soon in Orlando to reboot their season. Some people are making a decision not to join up. I don't think it's that many, but, you know, at a place like Georgia, at a place like Clemson, Ohio State, you know, other places in the SEC, you know, you'd expect, you know, things a little bit different. I mean, you hear a lot about these athletes, you know, kind of being more empowered. So we'll see what that looks like as you know, sports get going during these very unique times.
Yeah, and let's hope that we can get everything rolling like normal, but I don't know how long that'll take. Let's get to a couple nuggets before we get out of here. We're kind of keeping it abbreviated. It's been kind of a slow week, I won't lie. Last weekend, though, former Georgia golfer Chris Kirk, who also lives here in Athens, won on the Korn Ferry Tour. Of course, he's had a well-documented story where he had to take about a three-month break last year to kind of battle alcohol and depression issues, and was reading a good story today on PGA's website about how he has come back from that and, you know, really took a step back and kind of found himself, you know, needing to really be there for his family and took a hard look at his life. And, And anyway, he's bounced back, won on the Corn Ferry Tour. He'll actually be back next week, I believe, on the PGA Tour at a tournament. So that's good to see Chris Kirk succeeding after what he has gone through. Also, had to mention Bakari Rambo. We talked about him last week on the podcast, getting arrested on a rape charge. He was granted a bond on Monday, $20,000 from the Athens Clark Superior Court. And so we will keep an eye on that situation as it goes forward. But that's all I got, Mark. What do you have to say about anything else that could be on your mind at the moment?
Got some breaking mock draft news. Anthony Edwards going number 4 to the Atlanta Hawks, according to CBS Sports.
What would cause him to drop? I mean, that makes no sense. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
Well,
I mean, he's been number one for one or two for 3 years now. I mean, what has he done throughout the pandemic that would cause him to drop from 1 to 2 to 4?
I don't think it was even a consensus number one or unanimous number one, 2 months ago. This draft has Obi Toppin, who kicked Georgia's tail in Hawaii.
He was impressive.
Kicked everyone's tail.
He had like 12 of their first 13 points in like a 3-minute span against Georgia. So he's good.
This one has Killian Hayes, number 2, and James Wiseman, number 3.
Who's number 2?
Killian Hayes.
And where's he from?
From France.
Okay. Sorry. I was like, I hadn't heard that name, but okay. I guess they've impressed over the pandemic.
Yeah. What do you think about? Are you excited for the baseball starting up? Now, I haven't paid as much attention. The Braves are going to be playing at Truist. Is that what it's called? Truist Field.
Yeah, Truist Park.
I mean, they're playing games in their home stadium. They're not going to Arizona or Florida, right?
Right. I mean, they're. Just staying on the East Coast, right? They're just playing their 10 games against each of their interdivision rivals there, and then I guess they'll play 20 more games against AL East, so whatever that breaks down to, four games against all those teams? So very short and quick season there, 60 games.
Yeah, we're going to be having our fantasy baseball draft now in July with this 60-game season, and it just kind of feels kind of weird to do that now. I don't know exactly the implications for those that play such things, but
isn't this the type of season like an Atlanta team would win a World Series? You know, a season that would have an asterisk beside it. You only play 60 games, and kind of like the '95 World Series. It was only a 142 game season or something like that, and of course the Braves won it.
Look, the baseball's doing the designated hitter in the National League. They're putting a runner at second base in extra innings, which means you think a super speed pinch runner now would be incredibly valuable. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can pull a pure speed guy, a track guy, to do that. Maybe the freshman sprinter from Georgia, maybe he'll get an MLB deal.
Matthew Bowling.
Matthew Bowling, I don't know. But you know what? I think it's a good time to do that kind of stuff. I think in college football, they should throw in some new wrinkles. Instead of overtime, you just have one play from the 12-yard line and whatever happened. I don't know. I'm just saying you need something. Spice it up a little bit. Bring something different.
Well, I was thinking that this has probably caused a lot of review of certain sports. Like you mentioned, the baseball putting a runner on second, no DH, or all DH, no hitting by pitchers. You know, it might be the kind of the catalyst for change that was needed to keep sports. You know, I was thinking about NASCAR races. They've had a couple of 500-kilometer races, where it shortens the race. And in these days of attention spans and whatnot, maybe that's what NASCAR needs to maybe draw an audience, And, of course, with the current situation with Bubba Wallace bringing in a different maybe audience than it had in the past, maybe that's some good things for the sport. But that's all a conversation for another day. So, with that being said, we will come at you again next week, I believe, with the Bulldogs Extra podcast from the Athens Banner Herald.
No, not so fast. I think we're going to take a break next week. little time off for one of us, and we will be back maybe after July 4th. Maybe we'll be talking then about how everything's calmed down and everyone started to socially distance, put on a mask, and I don't know. We can let's hope for some positive mojo out there. Everybody be well and stay safe. And Ryan, enjoy your date with your very special someone tonight.
Thank you. I definitely will, and we'll wear a mask while we try to socially distance at Walker's. That's it, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. Tune in next time, whenever that may be. We'll be coming back at you, like Mark said, with hopefully some positive news. So take care, and we'll talk to you then.
See ya.